Welcome to DevMode.fm, a podcast dedicated to the tools, techniques, and technologies used in modern web development. I'm Andrew Welch from NY Studio 107, and here, on location in Sydney, Australia, I have Matt Barron. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Andrew. How are you?
Good, man. Thanks for coming on, and we wanted to talk to you today about exiting the tech business, you know, giving the bird to the tech business and saying goodbye, right?
Yeah, well, it's certainly an interesting podcast idea. Certainly different from any other ones in the tech industry.
Yeah, we're usually encouraging people to learn, people to do something, and now we're talking about getting the hell out, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So let me set it up for you. So if you were out on Fraser Island in Queensland, Australia, and you were hunting the dingo that stole your baby, and your mate that and your mate that was helping you hunt the dingo turned to you and said, "Hey, why would anyone leave the tech business?" What would you tell them?
Right, I'd say that, you know, my reason is that I've been working in the tech industry now for 28 years, something like that. Thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been great. I've traveled all over the world, done all sorts of things.
You got to be quick, man. The dingo's running off with your baby.
I would say just get out there and do something else. You know, it's a big world.
Right.
You know, it's great sitting behind you, but sitting at laptops and traveling around and everything. But at a certain stage in your life, it's nice to get out and do something completely different.
At some point, you want to see the world with your eyes, not through the screen.
Exactly.
Is what you're telling me. Yeah. So just to give people some background on you. So you have been in the design business for a long time. Like, how did you get your start, like, doing any kind of design?
Originally, I think I kind of crashed out of school at about 16. Didn't enjoy school. So I just left and went surfing and hung out and played guitar.
So you had your midlife crisis at 16.
I had one of the many midlife crises.
Fair enough.
And so I was doing that. I wasn't really doing anything in particular, anything interesting. And my father had left from New Zealand. I grew up in New Zealand. He'd left from New Zealand, went to Holland and started a travel agency over there. That was his midlife crisis.
Mm.
You know, and he asked me to come over there and help them do these brochures. He said, you know, you need some job. Get off your ass and learn something.
Right. Earn your keep, kid.
Yeah. So I know I was probably about 17, 18 then. So I went over to Holland and no idea what I was doing. I'd always been into photography, but really no idea about design. Got a copy of Corel Draw.
Oh my God, Corel Draw.
I think it was probably, I mean, even back then, it was probably Corel Draw 11 or something.
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
Got that and got an old DX.
That was sort of, for anyone who doesn't know, and this predates probably a lot of people, that was sort of like an Adobe Illustrator precursor kind of.
That sort of tried to do everything.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't have any background, I didn't know much. There was no real internet. It was probably in the early 90s,
yep.
Probably just after CompuServe sort of time.
Oh God,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, around then. But so I went over there and didn't know anyone over in Holland, got the manual, the huge thick printed manual that you used to get, and just taught myself how to do it. And, you know, made a whole lot of mistakes, failed all sorts of things. In fact, what happened was I ended up designing all the brochures and they were happy with them, all the travel brochures.
Yep.
They sent them off to the printers and the printers just redid them all.
Did they pay you anything for it?
Well, I got a flight over there.
Okay, well, you know, fair enough.
So, yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Compensation, yeah.
But I found out that I quite enjoyed it and I didn't, you know, I mean, I wasn't great at it, but... And so I went back to New Zealand again and started learning over there on my own. And, you know, that was the great thing I thought at the time, is that the only thing that stopped you from learning anything was if you didn't have a computer or you didn't have any time. And so I could just
learn. Or even some people that... I knew some people that didn't have computers because, you know, their parents couldn't afford it or whatever, but they would go to, like, the library or some other public place and just spend hours and hours there. Yeah.
And it was a way that I didn't have to go to university. And I just taught myself. So I started, I got a few cheap jobs in New Zealand and then I got a copy of Adobe Photoshop 3, I think, when I bought an A4 scanner. That was still on PC.
So for full disclosure, when I met Matt, I met him virtually because I was pulled into a company called Society One to do consulting work. And Matt was on there as the senior designer, right? So that was sort of a fintech company, right? So
And
still is. I don't mean to imply that they don't exist anymore. But I have worked with Matt for, God, like what, 4 or 5 years one capacity or another. And we've become friends, but this is the first time that we've ever met. Right?
It is, yeah. So we met yesterday, which was great, you know, and full kudos to Slack for being a tool that,
that
allow, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of other messaging apps, and there has been over the years, but Slack seemed to be a great one to bridge that gap, you know, and it's just so freeform and flowing. And so me and Andrew have got a pretty good relationship, I think, over the last, you know, a huge distance, but over 5 years.
And it's funny because you mentioned CompuServe earlier that probably no one has ever heard of. Did you know that General Electric also had a service back then? Like they were on the cutting edge of this stuff, like a stodgy old company like General Electric. They had a service called Genie, G-E-N-I-E, like Genie. Yeah. And it was sort of like CompuServe-esque, you know? And I remember using it back when I was a kid. But in any event, so you were on at Society One as a lead designer. And in addition to design, like you were not just a designer, you also did HTML, CSS, and you did some Twig coding and a whole bunch of other stuff, right?
Yeah, that was, you know, when I started, there was no internet design, no web design, no apps or anything. Obviously, it was a long time ago. Yep. But I moved over to England and worked over there for 15 years, started a business, did all sorts of things over there.
Yep.
And we went from print design, you know, and we were right on that cusp of print going into web. And, you know, we went from almost 100% web, 100% print, sorry, to nearly 100% web. And I learned a little bit of Dreamweaver in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got really busy with the business and I kind of got out of it. I didn't really, as it started to progress into getting out of Dreamweaver, I started to just concentrate on the design and the creative direction. So I sort of got out of the coding, and it used to, the more web design we did, the more frustrated I'd find myself getting with the handover between design and developer.
Right,
No one's fault. It just, there was a cusp where you kind of came together and everyone hated everyone else. Just, you know, designers saying, can you move that 2 pixels over here? And no, that's too far. Can you move it back and develop?
Your journey into doing development was just you were annoyed with developers, like screwing things up, right?
No, I was annoyed.
You give them a design and they screw it up. So you're like, screw it. I mean, I'm just going to do it myself.
I think I was more annoyed with the real subtlety of design translation to code.
Ah, okay.
It wasn't so much the developer. I mean, I worked with some incredibly smart developers. It was more just that, you know, there's a very fine line in the end, just finessing that design part, which I would get frustrated more for myself, I think, than any. It was like, why can't I do that effectively, you know, rather than. And so I started using DevTools, and I just copy, you know, do it in DevTools, copy paste it, send it to the developer.
Well, I think you can be really good. You can be smart and still be stupid, right? But also, different people go into different professions because they're good at different things. So my wife is a designer as well, right? And she works with a team of programmers, and they will get stuff wrong in terms of the translation just because they won't see certain things. Like,
exactly.
Do you not notice that this is not the same size as that, or this isn't perfectly
and people
centered?
People don't notice, and that's fine.
And some developers, like, they just, like, that's not their thing. That's like an implementation or a detail that doesn't matter.
Yeah,
but if you're
a
designer, that detail matters so much, you know?
Or, people just don't notice the little subtle detail. And to be fair, I mean, most people in the real world don't notice either. But as designers, you know, I think that it sort of came about for me that I really wanted to learn coding was when I'd see websites that go out, you know, and that I'd done, and big websites, small websites, whatever, and they'd be kind of like 90% there of what I thought, but everyone would be clapping me on the back, oh, great, love your design. But I was never quite happy with how it came out.
Mm.
You know, you sort of, as a designer, you'd love to be able to take it back and just sit there on your own and polish that last bit. You know,
it's almost like a photocopy of the original, right?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't have quite the, it's not quite what it should be.
But nobody else notices, but you do, and it sort of played on me over the years. So when I was at Society One, I was lucky to be working with Simon Vrashliotis, who has been on here a couple of times.
Yep.
Simon Swiss is more well known. And I took him on as a front-end developer who loved design, because that was what I desperately needed in that business. And we ended up working, becoming great friends. And you know, me, Simon, and Andrew are really good friends now. And he taught me a lot of coding and and basically we had a lot of freedom in that business, I think. We were the only tech people in the business.
You could pretty much do whatever you wanted to, because the leadership didn't really have a handle on you. You guys were kind of free range, you know. We were able to do whatever you wanted, really.
So we were quite lucky in that, and I learned an awful lot, you know. Yeah, I learned pretty much all CSS and SAS, which I know a lot of people don't like. I happen to really like it, and I understood it. And you know, you get to that point where you can really finesse stuff and you know exactly how you're going
to
do it.
Well, and to get back to your point about a lot of people in the real world might not notice if the design was exactly perfect. They might not be able to articulate it, but something that I have been aware of is that the impact the design will make on somebody, like, they will subconsciously notice.
Yeah.
if something isn't quite right, they wouldn't be able to tell you that this margin isn't right or there isn't enough white space there, but they get like an uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, so working at Society One was great, the way that Simon and I and Andrew got to work together and kind of crafting the experience that we wanted to do. And also, you know, we sort of used it as a learning platform for all of us, you know, let's try this technology out. I mean,
and that was when Simon took his famous Christmas holiday, where he took it upon himself to just refactor the whole site using tachyons, right?
That's right, yep.
Got super excited. It was kind of like someone from the Jehovah's Witness was like knocking on your door, because anytime you talk to him, he was ranting about, you know, utility first CSS. But the freedom was there to do that. And the interesting thing about you is that, you know, coming from your self-taught design background, you also were then self-taught in terms of HTML, CSS, SAS. You were even doing some Twig stuff with Craft. And I'm giving this background on you just so other people realize that, you know, you were pretty steeped in the tech business and have for a really long time. And so we're currently, or as of like a couple days ago, right?
You were
at a organization called ThinkMill, which is a very prestigious, especially in the React community, front-end development place, right?
Yep. So I've been working there for just about a year now, probably exactly a year, I think. We are a big React dev house and design agency. We function less like a traditional agency. We don't do campaign work or anything like that. We did just last week put on the React Conf Australia conference.
Yeah, React Australia. Yeah,
big conference. I did a lot of work on that. A lot of design work on that.
I went to dinner last night at a place across the street from my hotel here, and there's a guy sitting there with a girl wearing a React Conf Australia T-shirt on.
There you go. I would have designed that one.
I was going to go up and talk to him, but I'm just like, nah, like I don't want to ruin his date. You know what I mean? But ThinkMill there are a lot of very interesting characters that have come out of there in terms of influence on the React and JavaScript world. And it's a very development centric agency, right?
Yeah, a lot of clever people. Great, you know, it was a great experience. Probably the best place I've worked at in the last 4 or 5 years. So, quite a while. One of the best companies I've worked at, and a great team of people that really play to their own skill sets and just basically no bullshit. And that's a classic agency term that just about all agencies use. You know, they're all no bullshit. But ThinkMill actually was, you know. And it was just a great place to work.
So you have to say it twice? You have to say no bullshit, no bullshit? Like, because it's usually
like
bullshit
when
they say they're no bullshit? Okay.
Well, I've heard it a lot over the years. We say it like it is, but it's not really.
Well, a lot of times corporations remind me of toddlers in that they'll learn certain words and they'll just keep repeating them, but they don't really know what they mean, right? So you'll hear these, like, you know, a decade ago it was synergy, and you know you'll hear these buzzwords that they will all just start parroting, but they don't necessarily embrace them, you know.
Or they live them on, you know, there's a lot of living them on the surface.
Right.
But as soon as it comes to clients saying anything, we'll do.
Oh yeah,
you know,
right.
So client, you
know. Well, so I think the reason why I wanted, again, some background on you is, okay, so you're working at ThinkMill. You're working at this fantastic place. You're reunited with Simon, right? Why? Why are you leaving? This sounds like the apex of a mountain in some ways. Like, what is going on?
You're completely right. This is ThinkMill, I think, is my ultimate place to be working in terms of, you know, the work we're doing, the people and the kind of culture that we have. And so it's been a really hard decision to quit not only ThinkMill, but quit the entire industry. It sort of came about, I've been feeling in a little bit of a rut for a few years now. I still enjoy design. I still enjoy the culture and the people I work with, but there's just something been nagging at me for the last couple of years. And late last year, I said, well, what am I going to do about this? And I had this moment where I thought, well, I've got one more day to live. I've got one more day to live.
Wait, you're not going to spend that last day designing a logo?
No, I'm not.
Are you
sure? Actually not, no. So what's the one thing that I'd like to do more than anything else on earth?
All right.
You know, interestingly enough for me, it turned out to be that I'd like to drive a road train in the Australian outback.
All right, you got to explain to everybody what a road train is.
So Google it for a start. I don't think you're going to get anything. You're not going to get anything too weird, I don't think.
You never know.
But they're basically extremely large trucks that carry supplies out to like remote regions and mines in the outback.
Yeah, like we would call it in the US, we'd call it a big rig or a semi or a tractor trailer.
Instead of towing one trailer, you tow three.
Well, you can do three?
You can do four.
Whoa. Yeah.
54.5 meters.
Because I remember where I grew up was in Connecticut, and they had tractor trailers, and I forget what they called it, but they had two hitched together, like one back to back, right?
Don't they call them turnpike doubles over there?
I don't know. I don't remember what it was called.
And they only run in certain states.
Well, and what happened was there was a bad accident where it jackknifed, right? And it took out a bunch of people, and the state just completely banned them. It's totally banned. Yeah. So you're saying here you can have four of them strung together?
You can in certain areas. I mean, Australia, you know, we're not in the...
That really is more of a train than a truck.
It's a road train. Yeah, exactly.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay. And, you know, all right, hence the name. All right, makes sense now.
It came about, I mean, it's one of the... As a kid, that was one of the things I really loved was, you know, like a lot of... I don't want to say a lot of boy kids, but girls as well. But, you know, these sort of things that when you're young, you know, you look up to big machinery and you know, for me, it was trucks and diggers and I really liked that when I was younger. And when I was 5, 6, 7, I remember being really into it. And I used to draw lots of trucks and diggers and things. And I always had this sort of desire to go driving. And one of the reasons was that I just really liked big trucks and big machines. And the other reason, I just liked that idea of escape and open road.
Sure.
And, you know, where you're on the highway, you see a truck, where is that truck going? You know where it's coming from, where it's going, what it's carrying. And just something about that mystery of travel and
yeah, because people that work office jobs typically see a very, very small part of the world in which they live, you know?
Yeah.
In fact, in the city that they live, like that's something interesting that people that have started wearing smartwatches and Fitbits, right? You can actually generate a map and you can see like how much of the city you live in you actually cover. And for a lot of people, it's the tiniest little thing, you know what I mean? It's basically from home to work, to wherever you pick up the essentials you need to live, and very occasionally, something wanders off somewhere. Yeah,
and that's true. I'm guilty of that as well, and I think that's one of the reasons that, like, I live in a beautiful part of Sydney at up the coast. It's on the peninsula, right up the very top of Sydney.
Yeah,
and it's a great place to live. You're by the beach, but you're also trapped in this peninsula that's quite hard to get out of. You come through Sydney to get out anywhere, and so you spend a lot of time in the same little area.
Well, I think that's universal because, so for instance, the first marathon I ever ran was the Avenue of Giants. It's just through the Redwood Forest in California. And I remember meeting a girl there. I don't remember in what context or whatever, but I was just talking to her and she lived there. And I'm like, oh, you know, you've been to the Redwood Forest. And she's like, no.
Yeah.
So she was in her early 20s, had grown up next to this amazing bit of nature and had never been there.
Mm.
Like, never.
Well, you could... Australia, right? Most of it's outback. You could probably count on one hand the amount of Australians that have been to to Uluru.
Or even like Fraser Island, for instance. Yeah. You know, like in our example where you're chasing the dingo that stole your baby. I've talked to people, I've been to Fraser Island, but I talk to people I meet here and a lot of them have never been. And it's a beautiful place, you know?
It happens everywhere. You're exactly right.
Yeah, I think it's universal.
And, you know, I think that's, you know, in some ways it's easy. It's a nice safe existence.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, these days you do get people traveling around and working more on laptops. And you know, Thinkmill has a great remote working culture. And I've always been a huge fan of remote working. So I do that a lot. But it still hadn't been enough for me to, you know, to kind of think I'm getting towards 50 now.
Right.
And there's a whole lot of world out there. I don't really necessarily, I've done quite a lot of traveling around the world. It's not.
Yeah, how many of those countries that you listed that you've been to are you legally allowed to return to?
most of them.
Most of them. Okay, all right, fair enough. Yeah.
So it's not so much like traveling around the world. I mean, that's great. And it was more just traveling around the country that I'm living in now and getting paid to travel and waking up in a different place every day.
Right.
And so I've decided to make it happen. And I spent the last 6 to 8 months working hard on the sidelines, getting my truck license. That was fun. You know, forklift license. There's all sorts of other little endorsements you can get.
And these are just other pieces of big equipment that you are allowed to operate.
Yeah, there's forklift. I have the dangerous goods license. license. I have, you know, construction industry licenses. There's an absolute ton of things.
So with your design background, if you are working a forklift in some warehouse somewhere, are you going to like arrange the boxes in some kind of pleasing symmetrical design? Or
I think at the beginning, I'll just be doing it however the foreman yells at me to do it.
Okay,
and do it faster.
Right, okay.
It's probably the...
I just have the feeling like a couple of years on the job, you're going to be making these crazy like displays.
Oh, probably. I mean, one of the great things, apart from forklifts, is that, you know, you see in the States, and you see everywhere, actually. If you take a look at it next time you're on the highway, you'll see some beautifully looked after trucks.
Right.
And semis driving around. And I'm quite interested in that side of it as well. You know, people spend an awful lot of time and money just keeping their rigs polished and clean, and, you know, so...
It's like people with their Harleys, right?
Yeah,
you know, where they're
exactly
outside
like
just
that,
making
yeah.
them gorgeous.
Yeah, so people put a lot of spare time into it, cleaning them and keeping them nice, and it's a pride thing.
So that's really interesting to me that you are going from immersed in the tech business to wanting as little to do with the tech business as possible,
yeah,
right? Is that what's going on?
It's a total switch.
And how much of it is burnout and just disgust with the tech business, and how much of it is just, I could have been doing anything for the last 20 years. I just want to do something different now.
I don't think any of it. There is burnout from the tech industry, I think. I think that, you know,
Was it JavaScript? Did JavaScript do it? Did
JavaScript
it kill you?
And React and Webpack and all that.
Webpack, I just want to make a website, man.
It definitely has had an effect on me, and I have done some React courses, and I have really tried to get into it, and I probably could have tried harder, but I just I've had this massive urge to learn SAS and CSS and over the years, and I absolutely loved it, and I just could not get into, you know, things like CSS and JS and stuff like that.
Right. Yep.
I know it's easier. I know it's better. It separates, you know, things out, but I just couldn't get into it, and I couldn't find the love for it, and that's definitely part of it.
Right.
I have been playing on Webflow recently, which I actually quite like.
What did you think of that in terms of, you still need some CSS skill and some HTML skill, but
I'm thinking about just running a little sideline business doing websites solely in Webflow.
Well, the great thing for you is that there's zero DevOps then, because you can just click a button to host it and you're done.
I think, you know, I'm going to be quite severely time limited now. And I know, you know, I've been looking over the last good few months trying to get a job in the trucking industry, and it's amazing. Like a lot of these industries, they have websites, but most of them are shocking.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really shocking. And they have them. And so sort of just toying with the idea of a quick, fast, Webflow-based design, you know, whether it's one page or, you know, four or five pages.
Well, I think it's where you bring the value, right?
Yeah.
So if in the website, where the value really is the design, like if it's a relatively straightforward, simple-ish site or whatever, where there isn't a whole lot of gears turning behind the scenes, and the real value is in the design and the look, then that's a perfect case for both you and Webflow, right?
And I think Webflow as well does a great job of the different screen sizes too. I think it's quite neat how you just change the screen size and do what you want on that one, and it just floats, you know, cascades down. I mean,
And that's where I think the frustration builds, though, is a lot of these things are wonderful tools. Like Webflow is a wonderful tool. React is a wonderful tool. But it's when you use that for everything, or you use it for things where it's not appropriate to be using it. So for instance, almost every site that you would want to build in Webflow would be a horrible choice to use React to build the website. Like it just would, it's just a whole lot of tooling for not much return if it's like a simple brochure site. But on the other side of the fence, using Webflow to produce a larger site is just, I mean, eventually it may get there. Like Vlad is doing some crazy stuff. It may get there eventually. But just when you need that programmatic layer, like that's not the right choice either.
No.
And I feel like where the frustration builds is when the wrong tool is trying to be stuffed in to do, you know what I mean?
And sure, you can make it work
if you decide
you want to. But whether that's a good idea. And from using Webflow for the last kind of month and a half, It's a brilliant tool for simple brochure websites.
Absolutely.
I like it because it definitely helps if you have a good idea of how CSS works.
Yeah, I think you need to whenever you get any distance into it. I think you need that.
It really allows you to do some quite fun stuff. And, you know, it's just, yeah, it's a great tool.
Well, this wrong tool for the job reminds me of those, have you ever seen those internet meme pictures of you had one job?
Yeah.
Where there'd be like all these tiles that are perfectly lined up, and then one of them, whoever was making it, just said screw it and like cut it and it doesn't fit right. Well, that's visually what it's like when you pick the wrong tool to build whatever the thing is that you're building. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, you know, I've seen it go both ways, where something too simplistic is used to build something too complicated and something too complicated is used to build something too simplistic. And then the people that are asked to do that, that's where you get burnt out and frustrated because you spend so much time trying to pound the thing into the wrong hole, you know?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, you know, going back to the original question of burnout, I don't think it was so much burnout in the tech industry. It's just more burnout in life as you get to, you know, whether it's a midlife crisis or not. You know, it's more just as you start to, you know, not that I feel like I'm nearing 50 all the time, but, you know, you are in reality starting to get on a little bit. And I just think, well, if I get to 70 and I have another, you know, not that I'm going to work in the tech industry probably till 70, but let's just say I get to 70 and then think, why didn't I go and try that truck driving, that long haul trucking that I wanted to try? And I sort of came to the decision that, yeah, I've got to do it. And when I did make that decision, I suddenly felt, you know, you had that sort of free, that lift of in life of like, hey, this is actually...
And you actually feel something. Right, you don't have the numbing repetition of this day is the same as the last day, which was the same as the last 100. You know,
And you know, so I felt this sort of like this kind of, hey, this is the right thing to do. You know, and it's scary. It's absolutely scary.
But you're, and I mentioned to you this when we were talking privately. At least you're feeling something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
And the other thing is,
sometimes being scared is good.
Yeah,
you know.
You know, I've got the fear of actually driving the truck.
Yeah, right.
Plus, I've just got the fear of changing industry.
Sure.
You know, I'm starting at the bottom, so I'll be earning less money. You know, I'm having to move closer to where I'm working, and you know, I live on the coast now. I'm having to move further inland in the city.
To your point, so like in the tech business, and you probably have seen this with some serious like developers that you work with that are very tunnel vision, and it's all about the tech.
Yep.
And there's nothing else. You know what I mean? And you don't want to intervene in someone's life, but you know, someone like you who has life experience, you could be like, you know, hey, look, you're going to reach a certain point in your life where you're going to look back and you'd be like, what did I miss? What did I not do?
Yeah.
Like, so as and I'm biased because that I saw my life in a different way. So I was doing programming stuff when I was in my teens, right? And the path for me then, and I was even like working at some companies over the summer before college and all that, the traditional route would be, okay, study computer science, you know, and go that way. I ended up studying photography because I didn't want to be just a not well-rounded person, you know? And then when I eventually got talked out of doing that for reasons that I won't go into. I wasn't that great at it, for one thing. But also, it was right at the cusp when being able to make a career as a photojournalist was almost gone, right? It was like it was going away. And actually, no, I'll say it real quick because it is relevant to Australia. So I was friends with a guy named Rick Smolin, who was a photographer for National Geographic, which if you are a photojournalist, that is like the pinnacle.
Absolutely.
Like you are working at ThinkMill. Yeah. You know what I mean? And he came, I knew him because he bought my software, he used my stuff, and he came to my college to give a lecture. And we went out for drinks afterwards, and he's like, yeah, look, you know, Andrew, to be honest with you, you should keep doing this computer thing that you're doing. And I think, you know, part of that, he was probably being nice because I probably wasn't that great. But what he was also saying was like, look, what you're going to do is you're going to hold someone else's bags for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. And the business, quite frankly, is really getting difficult. And don't think you're going to be me. And he didn't mean that in a, you know, a snotty way. He just meant, look, I got lucky, man, you know? And there are only so many positions of that kind. So I took that to heart, ended up doing the computer stuff. But once the company was reasonably successful, like I was spending my money, like going off on vacations and a lot of the crazy scenarios that I put people into on the show, like diving in Papua New Guinea and all that stuff. Like that's stuff that I went and did. And I look at some people in the tech business, especially like kids in their teens and their 20s. And I'm like, man, you know, it's great that you're getting really good at this stuff, but there's other stuff out there.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to try and talk anyone out of the tech industry. I think it is a fantastic industry.
But like, don't make it be the only thing. You know,
absolutely. And I, you know, if I can say one thing on the other reason that I didn't really, you know, go off and try to live my dreams is that for years, like a lot of people, I was subconsciously worried about what other people would think. And that's that's another topic in its entirety. But
I'm just generally insensitive that I don't care.
Well, I don't care either. It's more I'm quite outspoken, but when it comes to changing your entire life,
that's
and
true. It's scary, man. You're right.
It's and especially going from something which a lot of people see as a really that's a pretty amazing industry to be in,
right,
to going to be a truck driver, which a lot of people think, what the hell do you want to do that for?
Right.
And so I was always worried, I always thought, maybe I should go and do that, and then I won't. Or I'd mention it to someone, they'd go, what do you want to do that for? That'd be boring.
Well, this is like the movie Office Space, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. If you haven't seen it, we'll put a link in the show notes. You should totally watch Office Space. But, there are a bunch of guys that are working these mind-numbing jobs in Silicon Valley. And at the end of it, one of the main protagonists ends up working a construction job. And his friends come over and say, hey, we could get you a job over at Inutech or whatever, and he's just like, nah, man, I'm good. I'm good. I don't need that.
Yeah. So once I decided, no, look, I'm just going to do it. And I remember when I first was going to go and get my license, the truck license, I wasn't really planning to tell anyone. I was just going to go and do it.
Right.
And I was going to keep it a secret. It was just that I thought, instead of going on about it, I'll just go and do it. And then I'll have it and I'll see, And then once I started telling a few people that I was thinking about it and why I was thinking about it, I was amazed at the response of people actually saying, good for you.
Go live
your dream. Yeah, good. And there was there's actually the majority of people said, bloody go for it, and they
right.
were, there was people saying, oh, I'm so jealous or envious of you going off and trying this thing. And it's actually been a really good experience.
Yeah.
And I was always worried, which you shouldn't be, about what other people think. And
right.
That's for young guys and girls. That's one piece of advice that I think is crucial, is just don't worry about what other people think about what you want to do,
It's tough because we're social animals. And
I know. But,
and I think we are closer to wild animal than a lot of people want to admit. You're walking around in your nice suit, you think you're very sophisticated, but it doesn't take much for that veneer to be peeled away. And we are kind of slaves to our biology to some extent or another. But you're right. I mean, that's something I try to tell my kids, and it's not easy, but I try to tell them. I remember saying, whose opinion of you is the most important.
Yeah.
And my kid was just like, my friends, no. Mom, dad, no. I'm like, no, you. Like, your opinion of yourself is what matters more than anything else,
And, Gary Vee, the motivational speaker, I don't really watch much of his stuff, but I do remember seeing something once where, he was talking about really don't give a shit about what other people think.
Right.
And it wasn't just that, he said, your friends, your family, he said, even your kids, and I've got a son who's 15 now. And that was a really interesting point, because you might not think about it if you don't have kids, you might not know this, understand this yet, but you do kind of think about what your kids are going to think of you.
Sure.
And he was saying, don't even, seriously, it's not like just flat out ignore their, their interests and their needs. It's more just don't let that stop you from doing something that you really want to do,
And but also you're teaching your son a lesson. So first of all, what it is that you're going to do, I don't think matters, right?
It doesn't at all, absolutely not.
The fact that it's truck driving for you, that's fantastic, but that's not the part that matters. The part that matters is you're going off to do something you've always wanted to do. You're pushing your comfort zone, and you don't want to die being like, I wish I had done that.
That's exactly
tried that. That's the lesson that your kid may not even know it yet, but that's the lesson that you're teaching him.
And I have actually, I've spoken to him about this, try to explain to him my reasoning of doing things and just exactly try to push that message to him. And I've said to him, if your dream was, for example, to become a street cleaner, and that was your dream, will you go for it and do it, And he's like,
he may not get it now, right? Yeah. And he's 15, so he's at an age where, he hates you, doesn't want to talk to you. These are all normal.
Yep.
All normal things. But even if he doesn't get it now, I think at some point in his life, he is going to get it. And he'll be in a situation where he's not happy doing what he's doing.
Yep.
And he'll be like, you know what? I can just do what my dad did. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think, we do have that sort of predefined route of life,
Right.
Go to school, do well at school, go to university.
Yep.
Do well at university, get a job. I mean, it's not that people do change their jobs a lot now, and they might sort of shift around, and you might stay in the tech industry, but some people are producers and they go on, they go on to do some development or whatever. So you do kind of move around. There's a lot more than there used to be in the past.
Yep.
But again, there's no reason to say just I'm going to scrap everything that I've been doing for now.
Right.
You know, sure, I've done 5-6 years of university, whatever, and I've done, I'm going to go off and you know, run a hotel on some island or
sure.
whatever, you know,
yeah.
whatever it may
whatever
be.
Whatever it is, yeah.
Don't let anything, you know, stop you from realizing that.
All right, so here's a hard question for you, though. So you envision yourself, you're a year into doing the trucking stuff.
Yep.
Right? And the boss that you work for finds out that you're a good designer and they really need help with their company website. And they say, hey, Matt, you know, I heard you're good at this stuff. You want to do this? I'll pay you double what I pay you for the trucking. What are you going to say to
well,
him?
Well, I'm already, funny, interestingly enough, I already pitched a redesign of the company.
Oh, come on.
So I'm already halfway through that site, actually, Andrew.
Oh, you haven't even started and you're doing it already.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah, I start all tomorrow. Right. I start driving tomorrow, but I'm already halfway through the website. You know, and I've also put that on all the CVs that I've been sending out. I put on there that these are the skills I have in the industry so far, which is bugger all.
Right.
I have some of the licenses, but I don't have a lot of experience. But I've also put in there as a little footnote on all the CVs that I do have design experience.
Mm.
And I've designed pretty much everything from print to apparel to websites to apps. And it would be a shame to just chuck all that away completely. So if we need to do, you know, if you guys need to do something.
But do you think that that could potentially hurt your chances of getting a job? Because they would look at it and be like, well, this guy doesn't need us.
True.
You know? Like, he's coming from a completely different industry. He doesn't need us. Like, do you think that could hurt you at all?
Probably not. It's not in this industry in particular, because number one, it took me 2 days to get a heavy truck license.
Okay.
I'm on a heavy rigid, which means you can't pull a trailer. You have to, it's like a tray truck at the moment.
Okay, right.
I've got a few more months of that left. The problem is, in Australia, it works differently to the States, is that you cannot get a job without experience, and you can't get experience without a job. So it's an absolute classic catch-22.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the main reason is for insurance. A lot of companies, they won't take you on until you've been driving for 2 years because the insurance company won't insure them, which makes it really, really hard to get into the industry. And I've been trying all sorts of rather than just looking around for jobs, I've been networking on Facebook and LinkedIn, and which I don't normally do.
Well, you could tell them, all right, I'll do this site for you, but you have to give me some routes or something.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. I know.
I should say routes. Route means something very different in Australia.
I'm from New Zealand. We call it routes.
So, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good.
Yeah. It does mean something different.
Yes,
here.
It does. You know what I mean? I'll do this website design for you for half price, but you have to give me some routes, you know?
Yeah, I managed to wangle my way into this one job that I'm starting now, and I'm pretty grateful for the guys to give me a chance.
Yeah.
It has been hard to get in somewhere.
Sure. Is it a union business, the trucking?
No, not here.
Really? Okay.
It used to be, I think. I don't think it is here now, though. So I'm pretty grateful to be able to get in there, and I've got a lot to prove and a long way to go. You know,
right,
I'm starting
right
at the bottom, and it's hard to start at the bottom as someone who's been at the top of, or, you know, at the relative top of the industry for quite a while, and you're going to the very bottom of another one.
It's humbling, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be humbling.
Yeah. But, you know, I've approached it with the, I'm here to learn, I'm like a blank slate, I want to do everything properly, I'm going to listen to all the old guys.
Yep.
And a lot of, you know, a lot of the trouble in industries these days is that the young guys don't want to listen to the older guys because they know everything, and, you know, whether it's this millennial kids these days or...
screams at cloud.
There's quite a lot of that. So I've sort of gone and said, look, I just want to learn properly.
Yeah, right.
I'm happy to do anything it takes to get in there and to do it properly.
Right.
If I was a young guy, yeah, sure, I'd probably come in and start as a yard hand or something
or a
loader or something if I was in my 20s, but I'm not really, and I don't really have time to muck around sweeping floors.
Well, okay, so how about another scenario for you? So Dominic from ThinkMill mentioned this to you, is that, you know, in the span of the next 5 or 10 years, you might have self-driving trucks.
Oh, yeah.
Where you could just be like, you know, you could be like hanging out to make sure everything's okay. You could be doing, you know, full-time design work on the job while that's going on. What do you think about that?
And as I replied to Dominic when he told me that, I said, I can't think of anything worse. Interesting, and I've had a few people questioning me on that, and I think these days as well, especially with global warming and pollution and things, and it's, you know, I welcome electric and self-driving, but electric and, you know, less pollution. But, you know, when I'm thinking about living my dream in the big machinery industry, it certainly wasn't silent electric vehicles that we monitor on it. You know, it was dust and diesel and dirt and, you know, and grit. And
I think you'll still get all the dust and the dirt, especially if you're out back, no matter what you're in.
I think we've got a few. I mean, that was another reason for me to try and get into it now, is that I'd like to, rather than sort of, you know, sit in these big Tesla electric trucks that look weird. You know, that
wasn't
what I really dreamed about when I was a kid. You know, it was these big Kenworth and Peterbilt trucks, which, you know, the big two big ones in the States and Kenworth here. You know, big shiny chrome and big, you know, that was back in the BJ and the Bear. And
so you don't want to be in like a little capsule that's kind of sitting
not.
In
no,
sitting
can't
inside
think
of,
anything
of a
worse. Yeah, I want the proper noise and the
and
old
it doesn't
school.
Even have a windshield, like you're just sitting there and there's a TV
just,
screen or something.
Or you just like drones, you're just sitting in some bunker somewhere.
Well, that's actually the interesting thing. So it could be like, you know how they've got those crazy military drones where the people that are actually piloting them can be all the way around the world. It could eventually be the same for something like trucking because you could be sitting in a room somewhere. Just like you did when you were in the tech business, like driving the truck.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that will happen. In fact, something like that. It will happen.
Oh, I can't even imagine. Like 10 years from now, Matt is sitting in a room, driving his truck, going, "What the hell happened? Like, I was trying to leave this. What's going on, man?"
Well, I mean, it's going to happen to a lot of industries, I think. Yeah. You know, drones is a huge one. I'm also training to get my pilot's license at the moment. I think I'm about 8 hours in at the moment. I've had to put that on hold while I get this other career up and running. But again, you know, drone pilots sitting in a room somewhere, and especially military drone pilots, flying drones over and, you know, over in Afghanistan.
You know, I actually have run into a strange number of crazy bush pilots from New Zealand. Well, like, you know, like in Central America and all these places, there'll be some like crazy New Zealand guy who's just there flying like this tiny little bush plane from place to place.
It's very New Zealand.
I could see you do that.
Yeah.
I could totally see you doing that.
That was, you know,
operating some route in Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, well,
you know?
I've actually thought about doing that as a job as well. And before, and I've always been interested in flight as well. So before I started doing my trucking license, I was actually getting my flying license. It's a lot more expensive and a lot more time consuming,
right?
And you know, I'm still going to continue to do that. I've still got another, before I get the first recreational pilot's license part, I've got about 10 hours left. But I was thinking about becoming a pilot. Mm-hmm. I've always been interested in cargo for some reason.
Okay,
like there's something about cargo.
You want to start your own
freight.
Cargo call?
So if I was going to fly, I wouldn't like to fly people. I'd like to fly cargo.
Okay.
And I don't know if that... I honestly can't answer why.
Do you know what the cargo cults were, though?
Yeah, I do.
You could start your own cargo cult. Just be randomly flying over some islands in the South Pacific and just pull the cord and drop some cargo out. And pretty soon they'll be worshipping you. There'll be statues with your effigy up there, you know?
Yeah, there's probably a few of them around already, actually.
No, those are wanted posters. That's a different, that's a different thing, man.
Same.
Yeah, same. So the interesting thing about this to me is you're trying something out. You've always wanted to do it. If in a year from now you're like, you know what, this actually sucks.
Yep.
Well, whatever. No harm, no foul. You know what I mean?
You know, the hard thing was first making this decision of leaving. But then I decided to, you know, I've been thinking about it an awful lot. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. I'll just treat it as a working holiday. If it's not what I think. And I'm sure there's going to be parts of it that I'm going to absolutely hate.
Sure.
You know? I'm going to, you know, like all jobs. And there's probably parts I'm going to love. And whether it's the dream that I had when I was a kid or not, it doesn't really matter. Because if it doesn't work out, I'll do it for a year. I'll learn an awful lot of things over that year about me and about different, you know, different things that go on in the world, and I can go back into design or I can go and do something else. But rather than seeing it as like I'm making this decision that is going to just change everything for the rest of my life, it's not the be all and end, you know, it's not. Worst case, a working holiday. Hey, I did this amazing thing for a year. I went off and drove trucks around and learned some new things.
And I wouldn't say it was a dream necessarily, but I still remember. In the fifth grade, I did this book report on the Galapagos Island, right? And I thought it was the most amazing thing. Like, they had all these crazy exotic animals over there and always wanted to go there. And in my, I think in late 20s, early 30s, I got an opportunity to go there on a liveaboard boat where we dove, like scuba diving all around the Galapagos. And man, was it satisfying to actually complete something that I had thought about doing for ever since I was a kid, you know?
Yeah.
So that was super satisfying to do.
That is a dream. I mean, that's, you know...
Well, it wasn't like a whole career, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I think, I mean, it's like the bucket list thing. I mean,
sort of.
I don't...
But it was more than a bucket list thing to me.
Yeah, I think that I was going to say...
It wasn't just, you know, I want to...
I don't really have a bucket list.
Yeah.
I sort of do things as I, you know, over the years, as well as designing, I've been a DJ and I've DJed for a long time. You know, I've thought about different careers. I tend to get really focused on what I'm interested in at the time.
Right.
you know, whether it's flight or, you know, crazy things like making bread or cheese. And, you know, I've got I make my own sausages and things like that. And I kind of thought about going off into these directions and becoming a boutique butcher. And, you know, so I've sort of thought about lots of things and I dabble in lots, you know, master of none at the moment. But
well, that's hilarious that you're talking about making sausages, especially because you remember I told you I thought you looked like Turkish?
Yeah.
From the movie Snatch?
Yep.
The guy's always making the sausage.
How those sausages
5 minutes, Turkish, right? He's always cooking them up. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. If you don't know that, great movie. Really good movie.
So here's one thing that I want to get to. I think there are a lot of people that they've got a dream, or if it's not a dream, it's just something they want to try. I think what stops a lot of people, I mean, yes, there is the just I'm already doing it. There's the momentum of what I'm doing. It's easy to just keep doing that. There's also the fear, like you mentioned, you know, what are other people going to think?
Yep.
But I think a big concern for a lot of people is the money. Like financially,
absolutely.
Like a lot of people are like, okay, Matt, that sounds wonderful that you get to take off and just, you know, drive around the country for a little while in a truck, but I can't afford to do that. Like, you know, like, has that been a struggle for you, or a way to figure, like, you had to figure that out too?
But that's probably been one of the biggest struggles of all.
Yeah,
I think I earn a fairly good wage now, and you know, I've worked hard over the years to get to that point.
Yeah,
I'm taking probably as of last week probably a 50% pay cut.
I would have thought it would be even more.
Probably
to be
more,
honest.
Yeah, something like that. And that's been a huge concern. At the end, I tried to make it not the deciding factor because that would be silly.
Right.
But it has played on me for quite a while. And you know, I'm having to do things now, like move house to a cheaper area.
Mm-hmm.
I live right on the coast. I love being on the coast. So I'm moving house to the out west Sydney. Out
yeah, you told
miles,
me you've never been there. You don't know what's
I
there.
Know, I don't know. Yeah, but I've... I'm moving out there and the rent is probably, you know, probably a third less or more, and the house, you know, so I'm having to drop a lot of things and just, it's going to be hard. I'm, you know, no denying it's going to be hard, but I never really was going to do this for the money. I've got to.
But you have to make a certain amount to live, right? So at some point you might have to make choices like you are with your housing and you might have to cancel, you know, your Netflix subscription or, you know, anything that's not necessary to allow you to then do
actually,
this.
I've actually done a lot of this already, so I'm culling off a lot of stuff that and of course you've got all the other things like daily coffees and eating out and, you know, making your own food at home, whatever, to take with
you. That's huge.
But I would say it's easier to do it when you're younger, before you've had children, you know, to make these decisions to go off and try something. It's a lot easier to make to live on less money if you don't have responsibilities like children or a house. I'm lucky in a way that I don't have a mortgage that I don't have to worry about, so I can move. I do have my son, and you know, I'm very conscious of, I don't want to make his life any
any
less, you know, good than it is now by doing what I want. Like, there is a part of being selfish to doing what you want, but that's okay. As long as you're not affecting, especially your children's lives.
It's true, but you know what? I mean, there are other things to think about too. So I've met any number of parents that are in miserable dead end jobs and they're unhappy doing what they're doing, and they're working incredibly long hours, and they're taking it out on their kids. You know, they're being either not that nice to the kids, or not around, or they're just not where they could be if they were doing something that they really enjoyed doing or wanted to do. And you can't ignore the effect of that on your children either, I think, you know?
That's a great point. I, you know, would say that over the last few years I have been suffering from depression.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that go on a lot. I think I'm probably one of I can't remember if it's a high-functioning depressive. But it's where you can come across as being, oh, everything's great and fine, but actually everything's not really fine.
Right.
And I've been struggling with that. You know, there's a sort of loss of... The worst thing for me was losing interest in things that you love.
Yeah.
And that's a classic depression
thing. Everything turns like a shade of gray.
Yeah.
Right?
And you
know what I mean?
You know, you're just not that interested in doing things anymore that you used to love. You think, why not? And you know, I mean, I've had to read a lot and try and understand a lot of that. And I have to say, once I made this decision to go and try this out, it's this feeling I haven't had for years and years and years.
Like I said before, at least you're feeling something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know,
this
sort of...
Yeah.
And I feel alive again.
Nice.
You know, and I certainly can't say that I've not enjoyed my time in the industry, in the tech industry. And I may well come back into it.
Right.
I've had some amazing times and it's been fantastic. But I was stuck in a rut, and it was not just a work rut. I mean, the work, we've got some great clients here. I work remotely. It's fantastic.
Sure.
It's not so much the work I was doing. It was just the whole package of my life
right.
was, you know, this rut of like, I'd get up and I'd do some great design and but I'd get up the next day and do it again and again and again.
Right.
You know.
right.
And 28 years times, you know, it's a long time.
At some point it doesn't feel that much different than putting something together on an assembly line, right?
And and it's sort of hard to explain, especially if you're new in the industry or you're still fired up and there's a lot of great, you know. And, you know, I could still keep on doing it, but I haven't felt this alive in years.
And that's just it, man. I think that summed it up.
Yeah.
For me, anyway, in terms of what this is about and why it's a good thing for you to be doing, is that you are saying, I feel alive again like I haven't in many, many years, right?
Yep.
And that's fantastic. That's great.
Yeah, it surprised me. You know, I've still got a huge amount to learn and, you know, so I'm starting at the bottom of this industry that I really know not that much about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm terrified, of course, you know, I'm terrified of a lot of things, terrified in a good way.
Right.
Yeah, as you said, like, you know, you're feeling things and I'm just excited to keep going with it and just to learn some new things and see what happens.
Well, I think that's where we're going to leave you, Matt. We're going to leave you terrified but alive, but feeling alive.
At least for the next couple of days, right? Alive, hopefully longer than that.
Yeah, until the COVID-19 wipes you out and then it's all
over.
Well,
yeah, that's when we go outside the hotel in a minute, right?
But that about wraps it up for another episode of the Devmo.fm podcast. To have every episode sent to your device, I'm doing this off the cuff, I don't remember everything. Subscribe to our RSS feed or subscribe in iTunes or Google Play. And if you like what we're doing, please leave us a review on iTunes. That's a great way to help people find the show. For the devmo.fm podcast, I'm Andrew Welch and Matt Barron, formerly of ThinkMill. Thank you for coming on, my man.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been a great conversation.
Yes, thank you.
Let's see how we did.
I think we were all right.
That was really all right.
How are we doing?
I think we're doing great.
Well, I don't know. I've never done a podcast. So.
Yeah, no, it's going good. No, I mean, really, a podcast is just a conversation. That's all it is.
Talking, yeah.